We are all well aware that the way companies treat their customers can be the difference between success and failure. This is where TDCX takes center stage. This business process outsourcing powerhouse isn't merely providing the solutions. It is a driving force that is redefining how businesses deliver customer experiences.
So joining me today right now is Byron Fernandez. He is the Group CIO and Executive Vice President of TDCX. Thank you so much, Byron, for taking time to speak with me and having me at your office.
Oh, my pleasure.
To begin with, for people who are not familiar with the work that you do, could you give us a sneak peek into TDCX? Because I think when we mention customer service, the perception that comes to mind is talking to someone thousands of miles away, speaking to someone unknown. And is that an accurate representation, or is there more to it than meets the eye?
There is much, much more to it, but that is also somewhat accurate. Like, our customers can be anywhere in the world, that is true. And we can be geographically very far away from them. Having said that, if I had to describe what we do in a bit more detail, I would say that we solve problems. Customer service, a lot of people think of service, servitude. People picture other people being scolded for things that go wrong, you know, heads buried in cubicles, and it all being a little bit depressing. It's not like that. It's really looking at the kind of problems customers are facing, whether it's billing related or technical problems or any kind of problems that they're facing with a product or service that they're buying. And how do we fix these problems for them so they can get on with it and go on their merry way? I think that's really at the core of what we do. And you said talking to someone, and I latched onto that a little bit because a lot of people think that it's on the phone. The number of people who reach us through the phone these days is getting lesser and lesser as time goes by. So we reach customers and interact with them over the kind of media and channels that they're present in. So it can be anything from WhatsApp to social media messaging to calls to video calls, you name it.
I do want to talk a bit more about that later, but maybe just a bit more background about the company. Started in 1995, some time back. So I imagine things have changed a lot, and you have been in business for a very long time as well. Could you talk to us about the shifting trends and demands, and how has TDCX responded to those shifting demands?
So if I talk about our early days as TDCX, we started off doing a lot of sales work. So back then we were called Teledirect, and what we did was we did a lot of banking, financial instruments, those kinds of sales over the phone, as you can imagine, most of that over the phone, and that's when we were called Teledirect, which kind of relates, I think, a bit more to what we were doing in the past. But that's shifted completely. So customers have gone to a point of not needing service versus sales, but needing us to solution for them, to solve problems for them, sometimes to recommend better solutions than the ones that they've already purchased for them. And so what we have today is, rather than looking at the work we do as outbound sales or inbound service type work, what we're doing these days is taking products, solutions, platforms, and then we sell them, we solution on them, we service any kinds of problems people will have with them, all the way up to very, very technical and difficult escalation levels. Imagine the agents that we have also have to interact with engineering teams, marketing teams, legal teams, all of that. So it's become a lot more committed, a lot more difficult.
And a lot more complicated, because I think you mentioned earlier, of course, you know, customers these days want to reach you via all kinds of channels, right? WhatsApp, it could be from the website, it could be from social media. So talk to us about that, that omni-channel strategy. What clients are looking for these days, and how what are the ways to serve customers the best?
Today, clients don't even want to know about channels. You know, omni-channel sounds kind of interesting, but it's sort of yesterday's conversation. I think most businesses today, they come to a provider like TDCX and they say, you know what, they don't even want to think about customer access strategies, what channels you want to use, what hours of operation you want to run. Those are all things that they don't even have interest in
so
anymore.
So what's the conversation that you have with your clients?
The conversation we have now is with our clients is mostly like, okay, we have ambition to take this particular product or service offering from this market coverage to 10x what it is now. How can we do that? Let's build a roadmap on how we'll do that collaboratively. We have customers who say, okay, we've got four levels of escalations of the kinds of problems that people can encounter with our product or service. Why don't you take over all four of them and tell me how we can simplify that? Tell me how we can solve problems in the product or service such that customers don't even need us. A bit of a utopian way of looking at things, right? If everything worked perfectly, they wouldn't need to contact us in the first place. I think now businesses are savvy enough to know, hey, you know, if the client, for example, is an airline, their business is flying planes full of people from one place to another. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. We, on the other hand, deal with customers and their problems day in, day out. We do this for so many different clients. Cynthia, we learn things in one industry that might be practicable in another industry. And these are things you get through that diversity of experience, mm-hmm. the different kinds of customers that you work with, as well as the different kinds of products and services that we
So you do employ a large number of our employees, 18,000 across 17 countries, Malaysia is being one of your key countries here in Asia. Mm-hmm. Could you talk to us a bit more about your primary focus and what kind of industries are you focusing on lately?
So TDCX's clients are mostly new economy clients. Think of digital native customers, think of platforms, think of payment gateways, think of stuff that's really digitally native. So a lot of our customer concentration is in this vertical. Having said that, we also do have quite a few more traditional customers as well, from banking to automotive to finance, some of the stuff that you generally think about right in the past. But if I talked about focus and where that concentration is, it's really in new economy clients.
Okay. Yeah. But I think these days most companies are in a way technology companies, because your online presence is the most important. I do want to talk a bit about technology, because to reach your customers you need to have the right tools, and of course automation, artificial intelligence is our really key buzzwords lately. I wonder, how do you implement those technology into your work to make to streamline operations and to make things better?
So you mentioned two things. You said automation, you also said artificial intelligence. I'll take automation first. Mm-hmm. The kind of work that today, if you got to see the kind of work that our service people do on a day-to-day basis, you will see them sitting in front of two large screens, like 24-inch screens, and there are two of them. And then you'll see really powerful computers, nice desktops, very ergonomic, and people just like moving through mountains of data when they do their work. Most of the time, an agent will have to interact with 5, 6, 7 systems just to fulfill one customer request. Mm. Can you imagine? I mean, the complexity of just remembering to alternate tab from one system to the other, update one system or the other, make requests in the different systems. A lot of that we can automate. If I took, for example, the core interaction type that you have, that you're having with me now, if it's a billing problem, and I take it, I register it in the CRM, I also need to do something in the billing platform, I maybe need to do something in another platform, I could actually, in theory, write robots that would do all of that for you. So you update once, maybe in the CRM, and let the robot do everything else. That's a fairly typical example of what we would do to automate away repetitive, sort of mundane tasks away from our agents. So that's very, very widespread using RPA, robotic process automation. The other one is on artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone is talking about AI these days, right? Joe Public finally has access to an AI model that you can use, right? When ChatGPT broke out, it's like suddenly everyone is talking about AI and what you can do with it. For us, we do have some early use cases. A lot of our clients are still very cautious. They're like, okay, let's take this slow, let's do things one step at a time, look at, you know, the actual ramifications of using it in the different use cases they're thinking of. But the early use cases we're seeing that are very successful are in knowledge management. Think about that for a second. I said 7 different systems, one agent, and if you think of the problem types they could have, it varies so, so dramatically. If I showed you some of the knowledge bases these people work with, it's like mini internets of their own, right? With so many different data points in there. One of the first things we did is take all of that data, put it into a large language model, and create a virtual assistant for the agent. So a customer asks you a question, something really complex, maybe you haven't dealt with in a long time. You ask your virtual assistant. He pulls up the relevant sections of the knowledge base, gives you the information in a context that you can then repeat to the customer to make your life easier as an agent.
You handle large amounts of data, and
yes,
there are definitely concerns about data privacy, especially you're dealing as a third-party company managing data.
I'll tell you a story first. So there is this company that I did work for in a past life, right? And let's just call it a telco company. And one of the apprehensions they had about outsourcing this particular work type, right, the service work type that they have in billing, as an example, was, oh no, they'll have access to our customers' data. And that could be dangerous, there could be breaches, we could get into trouble. And in the many years that I worked with these companies, we didn't actually have a breach, while I have seen several breaches on the other side of the fence. Now, being a third party puts a lot of responsibility on providers like TDCX. Mm-hmm. We have far-reaching ramifications if anything were to go wrong from a customer data perspective. And that makes us completely wary, completely worried about things like this. It's the one thing that would keep someone like me awake at night if there were a data breach for TDCX. What do we do about that? First thing is, 99% of the time, if we do not need the information, we don't take it. If there's no need to take information outside of our client systems, we don't. We access them remotely where possible so that we're not becoming custodians of any of that data, right? We may key in data back into the system, but keep that system with the client. That's the first port of call. Second port of call is, whenever any kind of data is being transmitted from one point to the other, ensure that it is encrypted. Whether data is at rest, whether it's in motion, whatever's happening to it, encrypt it all the time. Third thing is, in terms of the connectivity that we use, a lot of that is not proprietary, but privately owned. So you have controls as to who can access that data. And of course, you assign privileges only as needed, so really as little as possible, in order to mitigate all of these risks. And you know, we look at the whole enterprise from end to end to make sure that this is something that we look at. There are certifications that can help you in this area. ISO 27001, for example, in IT is very, very helpful. You could certify your networks to PCI, which is the Payment Card Industry Standard. So go through all of these established processes so that you're going through your own networks and infrastructure to make sure that data doesn't get leaked out from that infrastructure.
That's great to hear. My data will probably be in one of these platforms that you're serving. I'd be
surprised if it's only one.
Okay, well, I do want to talk about a bit more about automation you mentioned earlier. So how do you find that sweet spot between automation or AI-powered solutions and to personalize that customer experience?
So the whole emotive aspect is one of the areas where AI and technology isn't quite there yet to be able to replicate human emotion. Now, in some of the work that we do on a day-to-day basis, right, I've mentioned before that one of our clients is an airline. By the time people call the airline, guess what? They've talked to the tour agency, they've done things online, they've looked at other airlines, they've looked at every possible outcome. By the time they get to us, they're desperate. They really need a solution. Now, having a person there, a human being, is incredible. Almost irreplaceable. Having someone to listen, to understand how important it is for that customer, for example, to find his way back home for an important function. That's not something we've been able to replicate successfully with artificial technology just yet. Not yet. So finding that balance is really important. Now, in the example I just gave you, a person wanting to get home for something very important, it could be birth of a child or a wedding, right? In a situation like that, the motivation level is extremely high. That's not a time you put someone on a chatbot or tell them, send me an email. They're not going to be happy to do that. So understanding the needs of the customer at that point in time and being able to direct them to the appropriate channel is very important. Now, if you were asking, for example, whether the phone you want to buy is available in the color you want to buy, you'd be perfectly fine hearing that from a chatbot. So it's really understanding what the customer's motivation is like and what are some of the things they want as an outcome from that interaction mm-hmm. before you direct them to the right channel.
So going back to what you mentioned very early on during the interview that having employees mm-hmm. handling calls, that has reduced now.
Yes, it has.
But given that there is still need of human interaction and no wanting to reach to somebody to talk to, where are you focusing on in terms of growth of your business? Is having call centers still very important in your business? If not, then what are the areas of growth that you're looking at?
So the Customer Experience Center covers all those channels, right? And the channels we see growing the most are text-based channels. So social chats, social media messaging, these are things that we're seeing really, really grow and explode. And I did say that call volumes are dropping, mm-hmm. as in phone call volumes are dropping, but they're dropping on specific instances. Let me make this a bit more relatable. In the past, I'm not sure if you'll remember a time, but there was a time when you wanted someone's phone number, you would call Telecom Malaysia. And you'd say you want the number of this person.
I wanted
person.
To say Yellow Pages, but Telecom Malaysia works just fine.
The directory services, right? Now, that was a phone call. Today, you cannot imagine doing that with a phone call. Because it's almost, I don't want to say trivial, but almost trivial, mm. right? But when it comes to things that are really important, like if your phone breaks, you'll want to talk to someone real quick and get a solution real quick because you can't function without your phone these days. That device is so very important to you. And those are still being managed by people, mm-hmm. by calls, and there are still people figuring out how best to get that for you. Ride hailing, for example. You're in a car, you feel unsafe. You don't want to send an email to someone when you're feeling unsafe in a ride hailing vehicle. You want to talk to someone on the phone. Yeah. So if you ask me which side of the business is growing, our clients, customer bases are growing dramatically, but the channels grow in step with the kind of volume types that are coming in. Mm. So as a whole, it will grow, but I can't say which channel specifically is growing the most.
What about industry specific? Because some of your biggest clients are mm-hmm. that I know of is like Meta and Airbnb.
Yes.
These are, like you said, the new economy companies.
Yes.
But could you talk to us a bit more about, give some insights into which industries do you think will have the biggest potential for growth for your business?
So we are seeing a lot of growth in our new economy clients. If you think of companies like Airbnb, every time there's holiday seasons, you will get huge spikes in volume. You know, we would grow dramatically during holiday periods, and then volumes would come down after that. So we are seeing huge growth from these clients. We're seeing huge growth from payments clients, growth from advertiser support. That's another area that's growing as well. And strangely, this year, we're seeing growth in sales, inside sales. So if you think of sales environments where there's a dealer distributor network and mm-hmm. an inside sales specialist is needed in there, we've seen growth in that area as well, which was unexpected, but very pleasant as well. So we're seeing growth in these major areas.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I do want to talk about, switch gears a bit, talk about talent, right?
Sure.
When I was researching for this mm-hmm. interview with you, I was quite surprised to find that Malaysia ranks as the third
most
attractive
outsourcing location.
Offshore services destination after India and China. What makes Malaysia attractive in terms of the talent skill sets that we have here? Or is it that we're just an attractive place to be here and you're attracting all foreign talents coming in? What's the story there?
Both. Short answer is both. So Malaysia has a lot going for it. First of all, if you think of our location in Southeast Asia, and then you think of the quality of networks that we have, our infrastructure, our technology as a country, infrastructure in our cities, it's really, really good. You can get to this location we're in right now, 30 minutes from the airport, flat, on a high-speed train. That's an example of how our infrastructure is really mature in Malaysia. And it's also accessible. From a price perspective, the government has done a lot to make it very affordable for businesses. So that's extremely attractive on the one side. And then if you look at geopolitical stability, we're a country that's extremely stable. We're just outside of the Ring of Fire, so we're not susceptible to earthquakes, not as susceptible to storms. A bit of flooding happens, and that to us is a really big you know, disaster in and of itself. So we've got like a really strong, stable geopolitical situation going on, and I think that helps us a lot. And then from a talent perspective, wow, this is where it gets really interesting. Not many countries have multicultural people. So in Malaysia, we've always had a multicultural, diverse background. Mm-hmm. Most of us speak English, so doing business with foreign companies is really easy because we can speak the language. The other thing is that if you look at Kuala Lumpur as a location to bring in talent from outside, how many cities in the world, Cynthia, you could relocate someone from Japan, Korea, China, Pakistan, India, Vietnam, Indonesia, Singapore, Philippines even. Everyone would come to KL. And because KL is already that melting pot, so it's very easy to onboard foreign talent to Malaysia as well. And I think that's really one of our strengths. So a lot of our clients are using KL, using Malaysia as a location to hub their languages for Asia. Mm. So you have one center here that can serve all of Asia. And that's something we're seeing as a really strong value proposition for Malaysia.
Okay. Will you be investing for more growth in Malaysia?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah. I see Malaysia's growth potential as still huge. We're not... Okay, so we're not... from a population standpoint, we're not like China or India or even like the Philippines. We're a much smaller country. But if you play to our strengths, which is basically hubbing language and bringing in foreign talent, Malaysia is a great place. And we have the management skills in our mm-hmm. local people, and the cultural maturity, I think is the right word, to be able to work with many different cultures from all around Asia.
So let's talk a bit more specifically about a talent, right? You mentioned earlier that, of course, you know, you're looking at two big screens and you have to go across seven different areas to solve one customer's problem.
Oh,
so
yes.
The talent requirements is not longer just, you know, being on the phone, pick it up,
oh, no.
and be nice to the customer at the end of the line. So yeah. How has that changed and what kind of talents are you looking for?
So in truth, the demand for talent, Cynthia, it has always been great. It has always been great. I just don't think businesses and just, you know, markets in general understood that the demands for customer experience people have been difficult from the very beginning. We've had to learn to use systems. We've always had to be fast because customers want the answers now,
yep.
so they can go get on with their work after that. And of course, the quicker we solve the problems, the quicker we can move to the next customer who has problems. So speed, critical thinking, problem-solving skills, they've always been foundational in this industry. And one of the things that that I've been telling people that this industry does, and it's really amazing, and I hope you'll indulge me here a little because this is something I'm very passionate about. I think this industry produces some of the best social human capital in the world, and let me explain why. I'm an IT person, network engineer. Now, this is not a knock on any IT people, but generally IT people are not the most articulate. We are very technical, hugely technical, and very often we find it difficult to be conversational with people. We're very black and white in the way we do things. But getting access to work in the CX industry sharpens your ability to articulate problems. Besides solving them quickly, you need to articulate them well. And we teach that. That's completely foundational. In our business, if, you know, when I'm a service rep, if I'm 5 minutes late to my desk, someone else has had to cover another customer for 5 minutes. And sometimes those conversations can go on much longer. Someone else has had to cover for me for much longer. So the idea of discipline, being on time, being there for your team, we have some of the lowest absenteeism rates of any industry, this
Why
industry.
Is that?
Because we're very motivated. We've realized as an industry, the right thing to do is to motivate people. That's why you said earlier when you walked in, nice office, right? All our offices are nice. And they're all designed to bring to bear the attributes of the companies that we serve or the products that we serve or services that we're serving. So you build the organization around them. You make the spaces cool, you pay people well, you reward for performance, you recognize people for performance, and people want to come to work. And so it creates this level of professional. So someone who left, an IT professional could leave the CX industry, go out, and as an IT professional, he would be so much more desirable just because of the way he can now speak and his understanding of responsibility, of being disciplined, and all of that. It's so foundational. Mm-hmm. And I think we do a lot of good beyond sort of the direct CX work that we do on a day-to-day basis.
Just one final question. If students are looking at this interview, watching this, and mm-hmm. if you could have an advice for them, what kind of skill sets are you looking for to make it in this industry, CX solutions?
So I think, first of all, critical thinking, looking at problems in a critical manner, understanding problems, and empathizing are very, very important things. What this industry has taught me and has taught everyone in it is, every time someone calls you with a problem, and that's what we do, right? We solve problems for people. Empathize. Know the position that that person who's speaking to you is in. And when you understand where they're coming from, it becomes so much easier for you to help them. It becomes so much easier for you to know what to say, what not to say, how to deliver a message in a manner that will be most acceptable to them. And that kind of maturity can come at a very early stage to people who enter into this business. And it's invaluable because this is a skill that you use everywhere you go, in every human interaction you have. The other thing is keep an open mind. Keep an open mind because this industry is growing at a rapid pace. Where a lot of other businesses have plateaued or are even contracting even during the pandemic, this business was just on a rise. What does that mean for job seekers? It means that you can even fast track your career. Opportunities to step up, to move up, to do more are always there and always going to be there in this industry. So it's exciting, and my advice is keep an open mind, try it, you never know.
All right, well, I
tried it and I'm here 20 plus years later, you know.
Well, thank you so much, Byron, for sharing your story and also the story of TDCX, and best of luck with all the things that you're doing here.
My pleasure. Thank you,
Cynthia.
Thank
you so much.